This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Welcome along to the most inquisitive show in the whole world. This is a brand new edition of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. It's the show that doesn't just ask why, but also, well, I guess why not, really? And my name is Dan. Thank you so much for giving us a listen, for being there on this journey through to the deepest, darkest parts of the whole universe. Now, on the show today, we'll talk about one of the world's oldest creatures. It's nicknamed the living fossil because it was around while the dinosaurs were still alive. The problem is, it might not be here for too much longer. You can find out why in a little bit. Also, we'll travel 60 light years away. 60 light years. To one of the most inhospitable planets ever, and we'll find out how you can help save a species. First, let's catch up with our gadget girl. This is Techno Mum. She's here to answer all of your technology questions, and today it's all about the internet and how you can get online anywhere.
Techno Mum Fast Files.
If you use the internet at home or school, you may have been using it with Wi-Fi. But what is it? Wi-Fi is a way for your computer to talk to other computers without wires connecting them together. Data is a word for information. On our computers, there's loads of data. It could be pictures, videos, words, or music. Inside your computer is a wireless adapter. It turns the data into a radio signal and sends it out into the airwaves. A router is a box that's looking out for data, and when it receives it, it decodes the radio signal back into data and then sends the information to the internet using wires called Ethernet connections. It's similar to the way walkie-talkies and mobile phones work, and it's a two-way process. The router also sends data from the internet back to your computer. Why not look out for Wi-Fi hotspots next time you're out and about?
Techno Mum, with the Institution of Engineering and Technology, advancing and sharing knowledge.
Loads more chances for you to catch up on all the Techno Mum episodes to get your gadget questions answered are there for you on the free Fun Kids app. You can listen whenever you fancy as well through most podcast places, you know, things like iTunes, and they're always at funkidslive.com for you. So last week on the show, you might remember we chatted to a bee expert. His name was Rory, and he told us why the creatures are so important to life, to the ecosystem, and to getting food on your plate pretty much every day. Now, the problem is they're dying out. Now, we couldn't just end the interview like that with such a bum note cliffhanger. So he's back on the Fun Kids Science Weekly in just a little bit to explain how you can help save the species. First, I've got a science question. It's been sent in to me from Jake, who is 5. He's from Brisbane, down under, in Australia. And he wants to know more about the venom of the eastern diamondback rattlesnake. Well, Jake, mate, I'm not going to lie, it's pretty painful. The eastern diamondback has the reputation of being the most dangerous venomous snake in North America. It's also one of the heaviest too, and it's... Well, you know what, Jake? I think we're moving into Dangerous Dan territory here. And the thing is, I've already got a deadly thing planned for this week. We're heading into space to do that in a little bit. So I promise I will talk more about the snake properly in Dangerous Dan on next week's show, okay? Cool? Good. Make sure you're back here for that. Now, remember, if you've got a science question just like Jake that you want answered by an expert, you need to ask me first. The best place to do that is to leave it as a review in the iTunes podcast store. So open that up, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly in the comment box, ask me your question, drop 5 stars, and I'm sure I'll find it for you. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, we're about a week into the Great British Bee Count, where you can get outside in your back garden. You can build things that can help save a whole species. You can help rescue the bees. Now, Rory Diamond, he was here last week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly to tell us just how important bees are to what we eat every single day. And he's come back for another session in the studio to tell us how we can save them. Rory, you're the scientific advisor to the Great British Bee Count. Tell us why it's really important that we help out this survey and try and rescue the bees.
So bees are really, really important to us. As we heard, about 1 in every 3 mouthfuls of food you eat might rely on a bee because of all the pollination they do. And our bees are in trouble, sadly. There's far fewer of them around than there used to be. We've actually lost 11 species from the country, and there's 35 under threat of extinction. But we can help change this with the bees that are still around. So what we're asking people to do is get involved in the Great British Bee Count, and you can go out and spot some bees and help let us know where they are.
Now, very
quickly.
Now, very quickly, before we get into the, you know, the admin of what people can actually do. You mentioned that 11 species have died out from the UK recently. How many bee species do we think there are all around the world?
All around the world, there's around 20,000 species of bee, and that's more species of bee than there are birds, actually.
And do they all do the same job? Are they doing different things? Are they pollinating different flowers? How varied is the species?
So they are pollinating different flowers, and there's also lots of different lifestyles that they have. So you might know about honeybees, which live in hives and usually kept by beekeepers, but they're also bumblebees, and they live in colonies with a queen as well, like honeybees, but they're usually nesting in a small nest underground, like an old mouse hole. And then you've got most diverse and probably most important bees, which are the solitary bees. And they live kind of like single mums. So there's just one mother bee, and she nests in a hole, which might be a hole in the ground, like a mining bee, or she might nest in a hole in some dead wood, or even bee hotels in your garden if you have one.
Now, when we're talking about saving the bees and getting outside, getting involved in them, I think a lot of people listening might be wondering, well, why would I do that? There's a chance I might get stung. Is that true? Do bees sting as much as we think wasps do? Do they deserve a reputation as quite a cruel creature?
No, they absolutely don't. So a bee sting is a last resort in case she thinks that she might be about to get eaten or might be about to get smushed. So basically, if you're nicer bees, then they won't sting you. They'll just get on with their busy lives.
And is it true that they die once they've stung?
Honeybees do, but other bees don't. That's a little known fact for you.
Oh, here you go, while we're dispelling little known facts. I once heard that it should be physically impossible that a bee can fly. Something about the wings being too small to lift up and to create the thrust to get the kind of podgy bodies off the ground. Is that true or just an urban myth?
It's a bit of an urban myth. It's something aeroplane scientist came up with at one point, because he was thinking of bees flying around with their wings just flapping up and down. But now that we know that bees fly in a much more different way, they flap their wings sort of round and round in a figure of eight like a helicopter, and that gives them the extra lift that they need to get going.
So there you go, they are absolutely worth saving. They help so much of the food that you eat every single day. But how do we do it? Rory, I know there's quite a few ways that you and the guys from the Great British Bee Count are trying to get us to get out in the garden, but just talk us through some of the things that we can do outside right now.
So some of the things you can do outside is just make more food for bees in your garden. So plant some bee-friendly flowers. If you go around a garden centre, they often have little bee logos on them, or you can just see which ones they're actually visiting. And actually, it's so easy to help bees in your garden. Even just being a bit lazy can help them. If you mow your lawn a bit less, you might have some dandelions and buttercups and things that we think of as weeds popping up. But actually, these are really important wildflowers for our bees. And even if you don't have a proper garden, even if you only have, say, a windowsill or a balcony, you can still plant a few bee-friendly flowers in a window box or in some plant pots, and that can be really helpful for our bees.
What's the most bee-friendly flower that is easily accessible to us in the UK to try and plant in the garden?
So one of the best is lavender, because it's really packed with pollen and nectar. The bumblebees absolutely love it, and so do a lot of our solitary bees.
And bees are like every other creature, all the other animals. They need water on a hot day. What can we do to help give them a drink when perhaps they're a little bit parched?
Yeah, absolutely they do. So putting out little shallow dish of water and put some stones or gravel in there just to stop the bees from falling in, and you'll see honeybees and probably bumblebees coming to that to take a big slurp, and they'll take some of that away to the nest to help give their nest mates a drink as well.
Now that might seem very simple when you're listening. It might not seem the most exciting way that you can save bees, but there is something that you can do that is extremely practical, and you can almost have bees to stay. Rory, tell us a bit more about this bee hotel.
So a bee hotel is like a condo for solitary bees. So there's some species like the red mason bee and leafcutter bees, and they nest in holes above the ground. So usually they're in old beetle holes in dead trees and things, and sometimes in people's walls. But a bee hotel is a great way to to make a nice home for them.
And what do we do? Is there a step-by-step guide to making one? Do we need a plastic bottle? How do we do this?
Yeah, so you can do a bit of recycling yourself, which is good for the planet. And you can get a plastic bottle, you can cut it in half, and then you'll need some old canes from your garden, or maybe some bamboo canes, which you cut just to the length of the edge of the bottle and stuff them in really tight. And then you want to hang that up somewhere on a wall or a fence, say, just a couple of metres off the ground in a nice sunny spot, because the bees like it really warm. And then you should start to see some visitors coming in.
Do we need to put anything in the bottle to entice the visitors? Some sugar, maybe, something to help get them attracted?
Well, they don't need food in there. They're just looking for a nice place to breed. So the solitary bees are going in there. They're nesting inside these hollow canes.
And if that wasn't enough that you can help save the bee species, well, there is a close link from the bee to one of your favourite books and films. A pretty magical link as well. Rory, tell us what the Cornish word for bumblebee is. Oh, did you not know this? Sorry, it's Dumbledore.
Oh, yes.
That's all right, just go Dumbledore and we can make it work.
It's Dumbledore.
There you go. You see, and J.K. Rowling, she named Dumbledore Professor Albus Dumbledore because she liked the words. And she thought that he would be quite free and flighty and fanciful and cute and cuddly, just like a bee. And that is true. So, yeah, if you weren't really attracted to saving a whole species, then maybe that'll get you more on side. Rory, is there anywhere we can go to find out more about the Great British Bee Count?
Absolutely. So it's on our website at friendsoftheearth.co.uk/Great British Bee Count.
Perfect. Rory Diamond, thank you so much for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly over the past couple of weeks. I promise, if you missed last week's episode where we learned all about why bees are so important, you can get a load more information. Just download that. You can do it right now. Rory, thank you so much for coming on Fun Kids.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
It's time for this week's Dangerous Dan, then, the place where we talk about the most mean, cruel and deadly things in the whole universe. And today we're actually headed into space to go to a place where the rain falling from the sky would tear you to shreds. Because 63 light years away, you'll find a glorious blue planet. And it looks like a smooth marble drifting along the bottom of the ocean, where the blue on top shifts and swirls like the tide. This planet is called HD189773b. Sounds more like a robot's an alien's phone number, doesn't it, than a planet? Anyway, it's about the size of Jupiter, so it's massive, but it's completely uninhabitable. You can't live there. Not just because it's so close to its own sun that the temperatures soar to around 1,700 degrees, not only as the violent heat causes winds of 4,000 miles an hour to blister along the surface, you can't live there because it rains glass. Molten glass falls from the sky. But because of the winds and how fast they are, it doesn't fall down. It scythes from left to right, then from right to left back again, cutting the sky. It is actual glass. And this beautiful brutality is what makes the planet look so blue. So for HD189773b, although it might look like the most glorious planet to visit, should we ever get to travel that far through space, it should probably be last on your wish list. It'd be like taking a holiday to a paper shredder. It is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. We'll talk about how Christmas is coming a little bit early up in the Highlands of Scotland in just a sec. First, let's catch up with one of our favourite genius inventors here at Fun Kids HQ. His name is Sir Sidney McSprocket, and he's having a look at how things that you use every single day are made.
How's it made?
Oh, hello, Sir Sidney McSprocket here. I've been in action capturing facts all about manufacturing. It's for this rather splendid stipendiary compendium I'm compiling. You just ask it how something is made, and it'll oblige with a fulsome explanation. Just watch. How are tin cans made? Oh, the sort you get busy popping. Well, I see that the aluminium that the cans are made from is derived from an ore called bauxite. Oh, and that quite a lot of the aluminium used also comes from recycled cans. There's tiny amounts of other metals too, like magnesium and copper.
Step 1.
The first step is cutting a blank. A big lump of aluminium is rolled into a thin sheet and a 14-centimetre circle is cut out. This will make the base and sides of the can. The circles are laid out in a way that leaves as little waste as possible. A bit like when your granny makes biscuits with a pastry cutter.
Step two.
The next step is called drawing the cup. Another machine punches and pulls the circle into a can shape and a bump is pressed into the base, all in about 1/5 of a second.
Step three.
Now it's time to trim the ears. Oh, you may well say a tin can hasn't got ears. Why would it need them? This expression just means that the top of the can sometimes looks a bit wavy, and so it's trimmed to make it smooth and level.
Step four.
Cleaning and decorating comes next, and varnishes are used to make sure the drink doesn't get spoiled by the metal. A neck is also created, which will be folded over once the lid is added. At this point, the can will be sent to a drinks company to be filled with delicious fizzy pop.
Step five.
Now, once the pop is inside, we're going to need a lid to prevent spillage. Oh, it has to be thicker than the walls of the can to withstand the pressure of the beverage inside the can, and includes a ring pull to enable you to liberate the contents into your mouth. The lid is attached to the can by pressing and folding the edges together. And here is a fun bit of information to take away. The manufacturing process is so efficient that only about 1 in 50,000 cans will have a defect. Now, I must get on, but come back soon and find out more about manufacturing with my splendid stipendiary compendium.
How's It Made? With support from the Royal Commission for the 1851 exhibition. Find out more at funkidslive.com.
It is time for this week's Science in the News then. Now, a joint American and German mission has gone into space to try and weigh all the water on Earth. The GRACE satellites will orbit the Earth, sensing tiny vibrations in the pull of gravity that occurs from movements in mass. And it's this change in the swell of the planet after it rains and the ice melts that helps weigh the water. Also, the world's largest amphibian, nicknamed the Living Fossil, is in danger of dying out. The giant salamander, it looks like a long, thick, greeny-black blob. And it's called a living fossil because it's looked exactly the same for 170 million years. It's like a portal to the dinosaur times. But due to hunting and due to the loss of their home, these are now in danger of going extinct. And finally, Britain's only free-roaming herd of reindeer has seen two more, as live twins were born up north. The live twins like this in reindeer. They're extremely rare, hardly ever happens, and they will expand this precious herd that has lived in the Cairngorms in Scotland since 1952. We've been doing some beasts versus humans challenge recently on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. We're pitting some humans against some creatures and finding out who's the better competitor. They've been doing things like the long jump, they've been sprinting, they've been lifting things. Today, it's all about working together.
Extreme Athlete Challenge with the Society of Biology.
Just as the competition is about to begin, we're pitting man against animal in our Extreme Athlete Challenge. It's all about teamwork today. First off, we have the Jamaican 100-meter relay team, who took first place at the 2011 World Championships. And waiting their turn, a pack of wolves.
They'll be showing off their hunting pack work in a moment.
First, the Jamaican relay team take their positions, and they're off.
Although speed is more important, the relay team know working together is what will win the race. Each member of the team is watching his teammates closely for the cues to make sure the baton is passed smoothly.
Amazing teamwork. And next up, the wolves, who are hunting a pack of gazelles. And they're off.
Like the relay team, they're watching each other for cues. There is normally a pack leader who will decide what to hunt. We can see they're working as a team by splitting up the herd. Wolves also use ambush tactics and can drive their prey into places that are difficult to escape from.
Certainly a fearsome set of opponents. The prey is his team.
And I don't think we would be too.
Time to get out of here.
Let's hear it for the Wolf.
One of our extreme athletes.
Extreme Athlete Challenge with the Society of Biology.
Loads more Extreme Athlete Challenges that you can catch up on for free. Get to the free Fun Kids app over on your phone or tablet. You can have a look through all good podcast places, you know, stuff like iTunes, download it there. And you can always have a listen at funkidslive.com. That is it then for another quick trip to the outer reaches of the universe and back again. And we'll be back next week with more of the most amazing, weird and wonderful things from science. Now, remember, you can catch up with all our brilliant science series, some things that you've heard today, some more episodes of those, loads more for you to catch up on too, over on the free Fun Kids app. You can listen at funkidslive.com, and they're all downloadable and savable on iTunes. Oh, and while you are on iTunes, please do leave this show a review on the podcast store there. And then in the comment box, while you're on there, drop a science question that's been rattling around your brain, something you just can't explain, on that iTunes podcast store, and I'll try and get it answered by a proper expert for you. And you can listen to Fun Kids all around the country, remember, wherever you are, on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and over at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.